Welcome back to Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Karlfeldt. I am so excited about the show that we have ahead of us. We have some phenomenal information that could save lives. I am Dr. Michael Karlfeldt, and with me I have my co-host,
Tanya Hobo.
You're going to need to tune in to what's going on today. The information is jam-packed, so don't step away.
So excited. Let's go ahead and get this started.
Well, hello, Lauren. I'm so excited to have you on the show today, Integrative Lyme Solution with Dr. Karlfeldt. Thank you so much for joining us.
Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
So tell me a little bit about your journey. I mean, where did it all start?
It started a long time ago. It started back in 2010. I actually was releasing turtles in the local forest preserve, and I got 2 tick bites on my thigh.
How cool, though, to release. I mean, thank you for doing that.
But yes. Well, they had grown quite big, so we weren't keeping them any longer.
The price was just a little bit too high for you, though, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, so did you, when you had the 2 tick bites, I mean, was that something that you were concerned about, or you just kind of brushed it off and moved on?
So I didn't even really put 2 and 2 together at first. It wasn't until I started getting like weird flu, but it was like the middle of June. So I had like a fever and body aches and sore throat, like regular basic like flu symptoms. So then I went to the doctor, and that was one of the things. Like, I went to the doctor and I said, you know, I did get these random bug bites, you know, whatever. And so then she had tested me for Lyme disease. But unfortunately, it came back positive, but the CDC told her it was a false positive because there is no Lyme disease in Illinois.
Oh, okay. So bugs don't travel anymore.
Exactly.
Oh,
okay. So it was very, very frustrating.
Yeah, isn't that fascinating that if you're not on the East Coast, you can't have Lyme?
And even, exactly.
Yeah, so even though, I mean, so that lab test must have, I mean, it can't be a false positive. I mean, either you have an antibody response or you don't.
Exactly. And we were not educated in that area quite at that time. So we kind of were like, oh, okay, like that's what the doctor says, so to speak. And followed what she said and to not take antibiotics and just treat it as like a regular hay fever type thing. And so I went for about 9 to 10 months getting worse and worse and worse until they finally, declared it Lyme disease.
So how did they, I mean, what made them decide to declare it, you know, against the wisdom of CDC that it was Lyme disease?
So I actually was in my undergrad at the time, and I developed lots of just odd symptoms, like a stomach flu 1 week and then fine the next, on and off fevers, swollen joints. I at one point had free floating fluid in my abdominal cavity that was causing me a lot of pain, and they couldn't figure out what was going on. And then finally, I want to say it was like the end of 2011, early 2012, one of the doctors said, you should just go to Mayo Clinic. You should go there and they can, you know, figure out what's going on, if it's Lyme, if it's not. Of course, unbeknownst to us, Mayo Clinic doesn't recognize chronic Lyme. So they initially said, it's not Lyme, it's fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue and interstitial cystitis and migraines. And they did all the testing and were like, you have white densities on your brain. That's probably from migraines and all these things. And it was actually a doctor that was at Mayo Clinic for a sabbatical from the UK who came into the room and said, I have to talk to you before we let you go. This is what's going on. And he said that you no doubt have chronic Lyme and you need to seek an Lyme literate doctor, and you need to go forward and get treatment from that person. And here they're not going to let me even put that on paper, but that's what's going on. And I can't thank that person enough, because had he not done that, we would have continued on not knowing what was happening.
And how long into the journey was this? I mean, when you went to the Mayo Clinic?
It was almost a full year of not knowing. And I had already been diagnosed with like POTS. And I had really fast heart rates and just a flu, like a slew of all these different type of things that they weren't pinpointing to anything.
Yeah. And that's the thing is that it's so much easier to put you in all these different boxes and not recognize the root cause. I mean, it's got to be caused by something, and they don't just exist in a vacuum. It's something that's driving it. So how did they do another test then, or they just relied upon the test that you did originally?
So I actually went to a Lyme literate doctor, and they did the full blood work that showed the co-infections and everything like that, that confirmed it. But that took a lot of time too, because we had to find one. And then obviously they're not covered by insurance all the time, and then, you know, all the rigmarole that goes with that. And so then once we got there, it was officially confirmed, and we just started what they gave me as treatment.
And so what kind of test do you remember, what labs that they were using to?
I know they did a Western blot. I know they did the, is it ELI?
Elias? SA? Yeah.
Yeah, there Elias. We go. That one. And then
Eliza.
I know. Eliza. Yeah. And then I know they did antibody testing for the specific co-infections to show how much antibodies there were and how high they were. And then I think they also did something that's like your immune response.
Mm-hmm. Your T cell, levels. Your T cell
yeah.
response.
Okay. Yeah. Like your response levels. So I did those, and that's when found the Bartonella and the Borrelia. And all the, I don't know, there's like two other ones too. There and all the different, I want to say it was Bartonella and Borrelia were the big ones. And then there was like Babesia's underlying. But then they said there's no true Lyme disease, so to speak. There's just co-infections.
So they didn't find Borrelia. They just found the Bartonella.
They found the Borrelia, the Bartonella, and the Babesia. Those were the three.
Because Borrelia is the spirochete that's associated with Lyme.
Right. But on the testing that came back, wherever they sent it, it said no true Lyme disease, just these co-infections.
Okay.
So again, good old labs.
I know. It's false positive and false Lyme disease.
Yes.
It's not a exactly. true Lyme disease.
Yes. So, but it was fine because the Lyme literate doctor understood and, you know, kind of took control and started treatment at that point.
And were you able to find one in your town, or did you have to go elsewhere?
So we initially went to Indiana. And then about a year or so later, that guy disappeared. Couldn't find him anymore.
Really?
Yes. And so then we are now in Chicago. We see a doctor in Chicago at Whole Health Chicago.
That's kind of scary. So there's a whole clinic just disappeared all of a sudden?
It just kind of, I was supposed to do like my, I want to say it was 6 month checkup or whatever. And I called and the number was disconnected. And then when you try and Google them, they don't exist anymore and you can't find him. And we were like, that can't be good. So.
Well, yeah, that's not good.
Push forward and not look back.
I'm just thinking of all the, it was this raid of a bunch of different doctors that all of a sudden all committed suicide, you know, by shooting themselves and then being able to drive themselves to a river and dump themselves after being shot. And, you know, it was like hundreds of these different doctors that all disappeared.
That's scary.
Yeah. And it was all related to, I mean, they thought that it was related to a product that supported GCMF for people dealing with cancer, you know, so that was it was kind of a, you know, so everyone, all the big shot integrative doctors, they were all scared because of this was going on. So I'm not sure if he was one of them or not, but that was.
I don't know. We always were concerned because you also hear of like Lyme doctors losing their practices and their license and things like that because they treat Lyme. And so we were concerned about that. But for me, I had to get treatment. There was not really an option. So we just kind of had to keep pushing forward.
So the Lyme, the one in Indiana, what kind of treatment protocol did he start you on?
So there was two. So the first doctor, I did the long-term antibiotics and then different herbs. And then I went into like a remission for about, I want to say 4 years. And then I was in a car accident and I relapsed. So that's when we found the new doctor, and the new doctor did similar, the long-term antibiotics and herbs, but then we also did ozone therapy with UV light. And then I also ended up having to get iron infusions and just kind of pick and choosing what worked for me. But it was a lot of, I feel like I've been on almost every antibiotic there is to be out there. At one
point. So were they IV antibiotics and oral, or how?
So the what I was told is we'd start with oral, and if at some point I could no longer take oral antibiotics because it was making me too ill or causing me too much digestive issues, we'll move to IV. I for some reason was blessed to have a stomach that just can take it no problem and go with it, and I can take three or four at once and power through and be all right. I mean, yes, there's herxing and that's quite terrible, but none of like the digestive or unable to keep them down type of things. So we tried to keep just with the oral antibiotics because I also at the same time was being treated for migraines and neuro tremors, and my POTS syndrome had become heart failure during the second relapse. And they couldn't find they said it was idiopathic heart failure. My Lyme literate doctor was like, because it's from Lyme and they don't want to tell you that. And so I had to get a pacemaker and I had to get put on heart failure medications and things of that nature. So it was easier to stay with oral antibiotics because we could kind of pulse and switch back and forth with all the other things that I had to deal with at the same time.
That's pretty dramatic. If you describe kind of all the things that were going on at that time, I mean, where you're at and kind of, yeah. So people have a feeling that's out there dealing with Lyme and so they can understand, yeah, they can either relate to or understand the severity.
Yeah. So I was so fortunate that I completed my master's in speech language pathology during my first remission. Very lucky timing. And then the car accident occurred and I started my relapse. And at the same time, I decided to start my doctorate and just, you know, pull everything that there could be to cause additional stress. And so then the relapse started and all of the old symptoms came back. The black spots in my vision or losing vision or getting double vision in the evenings, the shocking sharp shooting pains down my legs and arms were back. I was having tremors on and off. My parents always say we knew something was wrong because you were sitting at the kitchen table tremoring and you couldn't stop during dinner. And then I also started to get worse migraines. Migraines that were like the aura migraines where you can't stand light, can't stand sound. You start to throw up, things of that nature. And then I quickly evolved to my POTS syndrome. They were trying to control and suddenly it was not being controlled anymore. And my heart rate was up at 160 and then down in the 30s, back and forth. And that's when they kind of were like, no, something's probably going on. But that took a long time to get diagnosed too, because no one sees a 30-year-old and says, oh, you probably have heart failure. So it took some time to kind of push doctors and be like, no, the test needs to happen and whatever. And once that happened, then it was confirmed that I was in heart failure and I only had an ejection fraction of 15. I was in very bad heart failure. But I had...
Could have thrown a clot at any time.
And, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And I had just kind of learned to compensate. When you have Lyme, you get really good at hiding that you're sick. You get really good at pushing past everything that's happening. So I had very much just gotten into that habit of I'm good. Things that, you know, I'm just going to keep going and keep going. And then I kind of just hit a roadblock. And then once the heart failure happened, they quickly found that I had thoracic outlet syndrome, which is where if you put your arms over your head, your arms start to go numb. And it's because you cut off the circulation to your subclavian arteries. And they think I've probably had that a long time, but the heart failure was no longer able to compensate for that change in blood flow. So I had to have both my first ribs removed. I had to go through that whole process of getting that diagnosed and all the procedures that went with it. I also started to have my veins in my legs were just no longer working. I had varicose veins when I was like 11. So it started very early. And then during the Lyme, it just got horrifically worse. So I then treated once, and then they got worse and to the point where my legs were swelling, my ankles were swelling. I was having pain when I moved around. And then there's the whole factor that the Lyme was in all my joints. So they had to repair my labrums and my hips. They had to repair the knees. They had to, you know, fix all these things. So it just kind of came to like this massive explosion of like my body was giving out. And I tell my mom, it's like I turned 30 and everything just crapped out on me and came back. So I had to kind of restart that whole journey that I was so fortunate the first time was only the year long and then treatment and remission. And I was basically just starting from zero. And it was very scary. It's a very hard thing to face. So, and that's when we started the new antibiotic treatments and the UV and the ozone, and the iron infusions and everything of that nature. And kind of, I feel like they kind of just threw everything at it because I had nothing to lose.
You were a ticking time bomb. I mean, you could have, I mean, at any moment it could have just given out and that would have been it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There's just a lot of, and I'm sure lots of people with Lyme experience this where you have symptoms and you're like, am I dying? Is it just a flare? Is it just a herx? Do I need to just wait it out? And you don't know what to do because if you go to the ER, they tell you it's nothing. It's just pain. I'll give you pain meds and you'll be fine. And that's not what happens. That's not how it works at all. And so in your mind, you're like, there's really no one to help.
Because, you know, when you go to the ER, like you're saying, they're not going to understand. They're not going to know. And the majority of Lyme patients have been to the ER countless times already and not received any help. So, right. And exactly, I mean, like you're saying, I mean, when is it serious? I mean, when is it life-threatening? And when is it just kind of symptoms you got to push through? Where do you draw the line?
Exactly. And it also becomes it became like a mental battle to figure out, like, I made it through yesterday and I had all of this going on and I felt horrible, but I made it through yesterday. So today might feel worse, but I can make it through today and then I'll make it through tomorrow. But I shouldn't have to do that, which was not something I understood. So it took a long time to figure out that I had to kind of educate myself and find the right doctors and keep looking. I can't tell you, I probably went to, I think I'm on my sixth heart doctor because none of them, one, understand the underlying cause, two, understand that I'm 32 years old and I'm not a heart failure patient that wants to just sit around. I want to live life. And that was very hard too, because a lot of the medications for heart failure, they just make you tired. They make you drowsy. They make you not want to, you know, you can't function. And that was not an option for me. So that was hard. And then finding the Lyme doctor that was willing to kind of listen to me, but then also give me knowledge, because the knowledge was power. If I knew what was going on and I knew how to help myself, I could advocate for myself. And if I didn't know, I needed someone to teach me those things. And I was very fortunate that I found someone that listens and then also discusses options with me. It's not just, this is the treatment plan, this is what we're going to do. It's, here's the treatment plan, but we have different choices. And let's discuss which choice is going to work for you so that you can truly live a life. And that was refreshing, I think, to start with, because when you go, I mean, I went to Mayo Clinic, and obviously they said, there's no such thing as chronic Lyme, move on. I messaged to try and go to Tufts. I messaged to try and go to Cleveland Clinic. And they all, as soon as I said that I had co-infections for Lyme, messaged, you know, was just like, sorry, we can't help you. So it wasn't like I wasn't seeking the right help. I absolutely was, but I was being denied the help. And so it's hard to keep going when that happens, because you start to feel like, okay, I'm a lost cause.
I mean, here you're going to like the creme de la creme. I mean, the top institutions that you think if somebody is going to know, somebody's going to find a solution. They have the resources and they have the research. They have the best doctors. You know, if somebody's going to know, they are the ones, and right. They're all denying you.
Right. And I don't think at that time I truly understood, I guess, how much doctors think more about their reputation than actually treating patients. I mean, I just finished my doctorate in speech language pathology in December.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you. It took a lot of work, and it was all during that whole time of getting treatment and everything else. There was lots of times I attended classes online from hospital beds, but I wanted it. And I, as like, for me, having a doctorate, I'm like, I want to help however I can. I'm going to figure out how to help them. And it was hard for me to understand that there's doctors out there that don't think that way, that think more of where I work says I can't, or yeah, I want to help people, but I can only help within what I'm told I'm allowed to do. And that kind of blows my mind, because then it's like, where are you supposed to look for help? How are you supposed to find help? And there's people, I mean, I was so lucky to have family that supported me and family that was willing to research and find and look for doctors and contact people. But there's people that don't. And so how do those people find help and get to help and really seek out that help? And it takes so much effort. And when you're sick with Lyme, effort is not an easy thing to put into, no matter what it is. You get good at faking it. You get really good at faking the effort and pushing through to get there. But there are certain roadblocks that you just can't. There's just too much.
And like you said, I mean, yes, you're able to do it, but you shouldn't have to. This shouldn't be normal life. This shouldn't be, yes, I can get through today, but I shouldn't have to do it this way. I mean, I should be able to live, you know, I should have enough energy to focus on class, to focus on school, to do all these things. And
And it's also, I think we're much better about it now, but there was a time period where I didn't want people to know. I was very, nervous about how it would affect jobs, how it would affect relationships. And I just didn't want to say it out loud. It wasn't something that I wanted to share. And we're better about it now. And we're better about supporting one another now. But it's still not, it's not where it needs to be.
And I've had patients, I mean, not with Lyme, but with cancer, that they really didn't say anything until they just died, you know, because they didn't know how to process it, how to deal it. They didn't want to be that person. They didn't want people to relate to them as that disease. They wanted just to have normal interaction, and right. and so they didn't. And obviously, then you lose out on a lot of resources that might be around you because you don't know how to communicate that.
Right. Or you're scared to communicate it.
Yeah.
It took me so long to just even ask for an extension on something during my doctorate. I was so scared that they would ask me why. And I am an academia to the core. Like, I graduated top of the class, 4.0, didn't miss a thing, never turned anything in late. Like, I am total type A. And for me, it's not that I didn't think they would want to help. It was that I didn't want that to be what came to mind when they read my name. When they looked at something and it said, by Dr. Lauren Monahan, I didn't want what came to mind to be, oh, she has Lyme disease. And, you know, and she, you know, she was really sick for a long time. I didn't want that to be the thought that popped into their head, because that's not who I am. Yes, it's part of me. And yes, it has changed me, but it's not anywhere close to who I am and what I can do and will do. And that scared me. And I think because of that fear, I held myself back in some senses. And I didn't get support that I could have probably really benefited from, even just as a sounding board from people, because other students that were in my program, you know, were the regular stuff. I got to work and I have to do these papers and this teacher is really hard and whatnot. And I went along with that as the regular gripes, when I probably could have gotten support from them of other nature too. You know, I'm not feeling well, I'm super exhausted. This is, you know, there's more to than just school kicking my butt right now. And I think they probably would have been very supportive. I know they would have been very supportive, because towards the end, when they found out, they were like, oh my God, how can we help you? What can we do for you? But I didn't share that for so long. I just kind of hid it. I was like this silent warrior of what was going on. I had this whole second life.
Yeah. And
I think that that's the reality.
And I know it's true for many people, maybe not for everybody, but a lot of people, they are looking for the opportunity to be able to help. And yeah. and they really feel value in being able to be there for somebody else. So yeah, and it's hard when you're the one on the receiving end to recognize that aspect, that, you know, other people really want to care and want to be there. Because usually you are the strong, I mean, you feel like I'm the strong one, I'm the one that want to give, and it feels safer to give, you know, than to receive, because when you receive, you're vulnerable. And but then all these people, obviously, they miss out on the opportunity that they would love to have.
And I think I missed out the opportunity of teaching others. I mean, how many people go camping every year and have no idea that, you know, it just takes one tick, and now they say fleas and mosquitoes too, or whatever can spread it. It just takes one bite for all this, you know, basically hell to begin. And, you know, to advocate for that and make people more aware, I think I missed a lot of opportunities to do that. And it wasn't because I didn't want to. I think it was more of just, there's fear. There's fear in being weak. And that's what our society says.
Yeah. Yeah. You exactly. It's the type A, the type A people, they are the ones. I mean, that's what everybody should aspire to. You know, you can't be an introvert. You can't be, you know, you need to be extrovert, and that is what we glorify. So, yet it's scary not to be that. And then obviously for somebody that is a type A person to not have the ability to be that.
Right. It's a lot of, I feel like Lyme was as much a physical game as it was a mental game. It was very much a mental challenge to who I thought I wanted to be and who I ended up being. Not to say that I'm not happy with who I am. I am. I'm so fortunate. But who I pictured is different. And there's almost a grieving process of, I have to change my picture. And I shouldn't have to, but I did. And that just is more of a mental, it's a mental game as much as it is a physical one. It's a mental game to figure out how strong can you really be and how far are you willing to go. And it's not for the faint of heart, I'll tell you that. It just takes a lot. It takes a lot of energy and a lot of willpower. And I will not lie to the people who listen to this podcast. I can tell you there were nights I laid in bed with air hunger. And if you experience that, you know, it is like you are dying, trying to breathe and trying to remain calm. And with that, you can't because you start to panic that you can't breathe. And I said, I was like, God, just let it end. If I'm not meant to be here, if I'm not meant to be okay, I'm good. I am a burden to my family at this point. Just let it go. And I fell asleep. That was the last thing I said. I fell asleep. I woke up the next morning and that was kind of when I said, okay, I'm meant to be here. I made it through the night and I just have to make it through one day at a time. But that's mental work. That's not something that any of our psyches or our mental abilities are built to work around and to understand and to really keep going after. That is like one of those things that it's like the hidden agenda of Lyme. Yes, there's the physical. Yes, there's the pain and the illness and the vision issues and the surgeries that come from the joints and everything else. But there's also this great mental game that you play with yourself, against yourself, every day, every time. And there for that, I feel like there is not support. No. You're on your own.
And I don't know anyone that really, unless they've been where you've been, done what you've done, I don't think anyone can really be in that place and fully understand it. I mean, you just say, well, just, you know, think happy thoughts, just be positive, you know, and how do you do that at that place? You know, I mean, that's, you can't.
No. And there's also, yes, the darkness is darker than you could ever imagine, but there is this sense that you quickly learn that when the darkness starts to fade, you know how to enjoy the light and to feel the joy more than you did before. Because one, you're constantly in a fear of the darkness will come back. The illness will come back. The Lyme will flare, the symptoms will come. Is the tremor in my pinky just because I didn't eat lunch, or is it, you know, a co-infection? That will always sit in the back of your head. But then there's also this grand feeling of how long do I get to stay in this life? How long do I get to enjoy this joy? And so you learn how to enjoy it more, how to appreciate it more, how to appreciate people more. And that's a beauty when you figure that out, when your mind kind of lets you do that. But it takes time. It's not like I get treatment and then I'm better. It's not, that's not how it works. I mean, it takes time.
I mean, It's like drowning. And I mean, the breath you get when you get above water, it's the best breath ever, you know. And at that time, you focus on that breath, but, you know, then you may go down again.
Yep. There's like a dark looming over everything, over every day. So, and it's, I don't know. It's very, it just feels heavy. That's the only way I can say it. It's heavy. There's like a heavy weight in the back of your, there's like this little line voice in the back of your mind that always says, you know, I'm waiting. I'm just waiting. Maybe tomorrow. And you just kind of hold out that it doesn't win.
Yeah. And yeah, what a journey. I mean, and like you were talking about that, you know, the grief of yourself. And I mean, it's impossible when you are in the middle of that struggle, you know, because every breath is just to survive until the next breath. And at that time, there's just no energy and an ability to really process the change of self. So you're seeing the loss of self, you know, in the middle of that journey, but you don't have any resources to really process that.
And it's unexpected. I mean, I was 20, turned 21. And then the second time I was 30. Going on, you know, 31, so forth. And when it happens, you don't expect it to be that bad. You kind of are like, it's a flu. It's, you know, it's, you know, okay, it's Lyme disease. I'm young. I'm going to get over it. I'm going to move past it. And then when you get into the trenches, you don't even recognize what you've given up until you come out. You don't recognize what you've lost. I graduated early from my undergrad because I was so sick, and I did not graduate with what I wanted, but I did graduate, which counts. And I don't think I ever truly knew in that time period that that's what was happening, because I was so sick at the time, until I was into remission again. And I could say, whoa, I graduated early. I didn't finish with what I wanted. I didn't, you know, what am I going to do next? What happened? Everything kind of just stopped. And it's like, you finally get a moment to look back and you have to, but for me, looking back was a waste. I was like, no, I have to plan forward. I have to make a plan. I have to give myself a plan and keep going. But in doing so, I never truly went through the grief of, this is what happens. This is what occurred. And it's okay. And I'm going to move forward. But I never let myself process that. I kind of just stuffed it all down and kept trudging on the road. You know, I'm going to go on and do this. I'm going to go work here. I'm going to get this. I'm going to do that. And that's a dangerous thing. That, which I didn't know until now, but that's dangerous. That's a dangerous thing, to push off grieving and acknowledging and taking a moment to really know things are different and it's not what you expected. Because the more you do that, once you get to the end, what you think is the end game, it all comes flooding back and you have to grieve a whole lot more. Because there's a whole lot more that you didn't do, you didn't finish, you didn't get done, and you can spend all day thinking of those things.
Yeah, the body keeps score.
Yes.
It completely keeps a score. So you can't, like you're saying, I mean, the tremendous importance of grieving the death of the self.
Mm-hmm.
And otherwise it'll just keep haunting you. It'll just be there and it'll be like lead weight around your ankle.
Yep. And it's very, it gets harder. The longer you wait, the harder it gets to truly acknowledge how you've changed. And it's not that it's a bad change. I wouldn't call it that. It's just a different change. And it's a different road than what you saw, and a different existence than what you presumed. I mean, we all dream of what we're going to be when we're 21, 22, what we're going to have when we're 30. You know, everyone has that image in their head. And when that image isn't what comes about, your mind does take note of it. And if you don't allow yourself to acknowledge it, it just buries itself deep inside until it kind of ruptures into like a whole slew of emotions all of a sudden. I think that's what they call a breakdown, a mental breakdown.
Something like that. Exactly. Yes. Disassociation.
Yes, that's it. So, I mean, it's just, for me, I feel like, yes, Lyme was a physical altercation, let's call it, to all degrees. And I have thousands of physical scars and thousands of emotional scars. But the emotional game that I play, I've gotten much better at, much stronger at. And I think that's taken a long time. And I think for those that are really sick, you don't see that as a possibility, but it's there. It's there. Your brain is very strong and it will figure out how to get you through every day and how to play that mental game and push through. And I don't know. It's hard to even imagine. Like when I was writing down for just to meet with you, I was writing down like the timeline. I'm like, holy crud, I live like 7 lives in just 10 years because there's just so many different factors and things that occurred that I just, you know, kept moving one day at a time, kept going, new plan. This didn't work, new plan. So, but it's out there. And I mean, I am so blessed to be where I'm at now. I mean, I truly, this is not, I am not in a place that I ever imagined. I never thought I'd own my own business. I never thought I'd have a doctorate. I never thought I'd be a speech language pathologist. That was not the original plan, or be good at it, let alone. But I am. But, and it's also, part of it is because of Lyme, because I was able to learn more about myself, learn how I can pursue my goals regardless of Lyme and with Lyme. And then part of it is also because I became a different person. I became a person that cares a different way about people and thinks a different way about problems. And I mean, for that, I mean, I'm blessed to have learned such. But if you asked 21-year-old me, who was very sick, I would have probably told you I'd be dead by now because I was not, I was very ill and I was not in any framework to get to this point. But it just, it takes time and it takes support. I will say that. I am very fortunate to have had a lot of support. So,
yeah, and to have seven different identities, I mean, like states of being, where they're distinctly different from one another, and the mindset has to be distinctly different during just a 10-year period of time. I mean, that's and that's what's important to understand. It's not just a linear process, you know, better, worse. It's a roller coaster, and you have no idea what the next turn is going to look like.
Yep. And you have no idea what you're capable of.
No.
I honestly, looking back, when I finished my undergrad, there is no way in heck I would have thought I was capable of doing half the things I do today because I was so sick and just physically sick, mentally tired, drained. I was done. It was not anything I cared to pursue. But with every change of course, I think my mind grew and formed a new plan and forged a new future and went after that. And it's kind of, some people ask like, how did you get diagnosed and whatnot? And I was like, well, it probably took about 48 doctors and maybe finally down to like one that maybe just threw the thought out there and it stuck. So it wasn't like this nice process of go to the doctor, get diagnosed, get treatment. That's not how it works. And when you go through something like that, your brain starts to figure out, I can't think this way. I can't think everything is A, B, C, and you get to the finish line of D. I have to start planning for A, then we go to Z, and then we come back up and we go back and forth. And when you start thinking that way, you kind of get through more and you figure out what's best and how to move forward and one step at a time. And you also become your own advocate. You become an advocate of, no, that did not work. And no, I don't feel better, because Lyme patients are kind of guinea pigs in a sense, to all these different types of treatments. And we all kind of sit on this balancing board of, do I feel better? Do I feel a little bit better? Is it just me? I'm thinking I feel better. Maybe this actually did make me feel better. And eventually you got to get down to the fact of, no, that didn't work. And I'm not, I don't care if I hurt your feelings. I don't care if that doesn't work for you. The answer is no, you need to try something else. And you just have to be very forthcoming in that sense.
And
that takes a long time to learn.
Yeah, absolutely. And also you have then, you know, people are in the mindset, well, it's, I just got to push through this. You know, I'm feeling sicker and sicker and worse, and I'm herxing and I just need to get through this. You know, it gets worse before it gets better. I mean, so it's hard to know. Told a prior guest, it's hard to know that line. You know, it's hard to know when is it enough? I mean, when do I need to pivot? You know, when do I need to change? And how do you do that? I mean, you finally found somebody that said, I treat Lyme and I can help you. Yeah, you know, and present treatments that the regular medical doctor is not presenting. And so you're relying on this individual, and because you don't know where else to go.
Yep. And you also lose your sense of what it's like to feel healthy. I don't know if that's, let's just say I have no sense of what it's like to feel truly healthy. I don't remember what that ever felt like at this point. And I don't know how to judge, is this the best I'm going to feel? Is there better than this? Is there more to it than this? Because I have never at this point really made note. Let's put it that way. When you're young and you're healthy, you don't make note of this is how healthy feels. And so then when you get sick and you're sick for a long time, you forget how healthy is supposed to feel, but you cling to any bit of this pain's gone. This tremor has stopped. I don't have a headache today. When really you should be going for, I don't feel any pain. Nothing hurts. Everything's good. But I don't, when you've been sick long with Lyme, you really just don't know what that feels like. And I know that sounds weird, but that's kind of, it's the truth. I don't know what it feels like to not have a stomach ache from taking antibiotics. I don't know what it feels like to not have certain foods make my tongue and my lips swell up. I don't remember what it's like to just eat things and not worry about it. Those type of things, it's not even like an existence to you anymore. And it's very hard to figure out someone that's going to tell you, this is good. This is healthy. This is where you should be and how you should feel, because I don't think there really is anyone that can truly say that. Yes, they can do blood work. Yes, they can do labs and say, by the labs, you look great. You look good on paper, but as many of the Lyme people know, you can look great on paper and feel like absolute crap.
And you can look great. Everybody says, oh, you look radiant today. And you can barely take a step.
Yeah, you can have a perfect smile on your face. Like everything is hunky-dory and really it's gone to shit. I mean, it definitely is hard because you kind of lose that sense of, you know, what's perfect? What's good? What's the best?
And do I dare to even think that I can achieve that? Right. If I set my hopes that high, I'm just going to be disappointed. So now if I set my hopes at, you know, I don't have a headache today. You know, I had a day without a headache. You know, that's your, now you achieved something you feel.
Yep.
So do I dare?
Do you dare to even like kind of make those qualifications or quantifications of what is feeling well? And then sometimes I kind of look at other people and I'm like, people actually just feel great all the time. That's a thing. That's a thing. Like people just feel great all the time, every day. Their heart's not racing. They don't have any, you know, pains in their fingers or anything. That's like a real thing. And you kind of are envious. And then you kind of have to just face the fact that, is that not for me? Can I get there? Or is it just not for me? Maybe it's not for me. Maybe that type of wellness is just not in my wellness plan, so to speak. So it's very hard.
Yeah, because that hope, it requires energy to hold on to that hope. And when you're exhausted, you know, you want to kind of save whatever energy you have.
Yep. It also requires a lot of pushing. And pushing back. I don't think society always, I don't know, was it Mr. Rogers that said, look for the helpers, you know, when things aren't going right and whatnot. And so we have this image in society that doctors can fix you and that the emergency room can solve your problems and things of that nature. And that would be great if that was the case. But truth of the matter is, they maybe solve 10% of your problem for today. And then tomorrow your problem will be back. And you have to learn how to push back and say, no, I don't accept that. No, I'm not going home with Vicodin today. I want you to figure out why I'm having this pain. I want you to look. I want you to do this. And that's kind of, I feel like that's kind of a burden to a lot of the people with Lyme, because we have to basically become medical books. We have to basically become experts in labs, experts in radiology, experts in testing, because if we don't ask for it, they're not going to do it. And if we don't push for it, they're not going to do it, and we'll never get the answers that we need. And that's kind of the sadness of where it's gone to. It's gone to that we have people like me who are horribly ill and have to take all this energy to find the doctor, one, and then two, ask for the right tests and know what they mean and figure out what they mean and what the next step should be, because there's no guarantee the doctor will make the right decision based on the results. Yeah. And that blows my mind.
Yeah, and have the mental stamina and energy to push back on somebody, you know, somebody that considers themselves the expert, and thinking that you are just a problem,
right?
And to be able to then have the energy to deal with that when you barely have the energy to get into the office,
right? Right. There are many times that I went to like my primary care doctor and my parents were literally helping me walk in and get into the room, and then to come out with no resolve. And we then had to do our own research and look up our own stuff and find our own next doctor to go to, because that one obviously wasn't going to help. And to do that when you're sick, it blows my mind that we expect that of people. It truly blows my mind that we expect people that are basically, I'm not going to lie to you, there were days that getting out of bed was just not even an option. But we expect those individuals to find another doctor, make an appointment, do their research, know what to ask for, know what medications, you know, are supposed to be given. And that shouldn't be the case. We supposedly train doctors to do that. That's supposed to be their job. And we no longer can rely on that.
No. Yeah, it's so sad. Well, do you have kind of final word? Because I don't want to kind of shift, because I think what we've been talking about is like the core that has been, I mean, so crucial for people to hear. So I don't want to dilute it with other things.
You know?
But in this vein, I mean, long this, you know, thought process, what would be kind of like final suggestions, final words of wisdom that you feel is really important for a Lyme patient to know and understand, that you feel that maybe we didn't touch on, or something that you wanted to highlight even more?
One, find support. Find your tribe, find your people. I don't care if it's a Facebook group, whatever it is, find someone that's going to be able to be your sounding board. If it's your family, wonderful. If it's not, find a group. You can do, I mean, the world is big and they're not alone. Question everything and keep pushing through. You can see one doctor, it's not enough. You can see two doctors, that might not be enough. Keep going until you find the doctor that, one, you're comfortable with, and two, listens, and it actually makes you feel better. If you don't leave an appointment feeling like you have a plan and you feel better, the appointment was kind of a waste.
And how many doctors do you think that you'd seen? I mean, if you would guess.
Altogether?
Yeah, guesstimate altogether.
Probably more than 50.
Okay. So I just want people to understand that there may be number 51 that is the right person.
Yeah.
So
for sure.
Yeah. So don't feel bad about, you know, like you said, if you walk out of there with no plan, go somewhere else.
Yep. And then also, it doesn't have to be, there were doctors that were not specialists in anything that I thought, you know, related to me, that gave me more information than any other ones. So even if you think like, I don't have a gastrointestinal problem, but I'm being sent to a gastrointestinologist, do it, because that gastrointestinologist may have more knowledge than the person that's sending you to see them and know other people that can help you. So it doesn't have to be like, I have a heart problem, I need to see a heart doctor. I have a neurological problem, I need to see a neurologist. You can see the most random doctor that you don't think is, you know, it's going to be the biggest waste of time, and they'll give you some of the most best information and put you to people that can truly help you. You just have to give them a chance. So there's that. And then the darkness does fade. The darkness will fade. It does fade and it will fade. I mean, it might not be tomorrow. It might not be next month. But it will, the light and the joy will come. I mean, it will take effort and it will take time, but you'll find it. And when you do, you'll recognize it and you'll hold on to it for as long as possible. But it will. And I think and get a dog. A dog really helped me. I got a dog on my way back from Mayo, and he has been nothing but the biggest healer I know. Get a dog.
Is sitting by you?
Yes. He came in when I started to get upset. He broke the door down and came in. So,
oh, awesome.
He knows. Dogs are miraculous beings. They learn how to sense everything that's going on. And it gives you something to get up every morning for. And if you don't have that, getting up is harder than ever. and you don't feel well. So that's a big thing. But no, I think that would be definitely the dog, and then support, and the darkness will fade. It will fade. It has to.
And it did.
Yes. And it did. Yeah. I am beyond blessed. And if I could do it, God willing, anyone can do it, because there is no way that I was in any way built to fight Lyme disease. So everyone has the chance.
Thank you so much. This was incredible. Thank you so much for sharing your journey, this is something that people need to hear. They need to understand. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. My honor. Pleasure. Have a beautiful rest of the evening.
You too. Thanks.
Bye now. Information this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not designed to diagnose or treat any disease. I hope this podcast impacted you as it did me. Please subscribe so that you can be notified when new episodes are released. There are some excellent shows coming up that you do not want to miss. If you're enjoying these podcasts, please take a moment to write a review, and please don't keep this information to yourself. Share them with your family and friends. You never know what piece of information that will transform their lives. For past episodes and powerful information on how to conquer Lyme, go to integrativelymesolutions.com, and an additional powerful resource, limestream.com. For Lyme support and group discussions, join Tanya on Facebook at Lyme Conquerors Mentoring Lyme Warriors. If you'd like to know more about the cutting-edge integrative Lyme therapies my center offers, please visit thecarlfeldcenter.com. Thank you for spending this time with us, and I hope to see you at our next episode of Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Carlfeld.